Good evening. This is Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. In fact, I literally am sitting in my cottage with a roaring fire in the fireplace. So if you can imagine that, it's very heartwarming. We've had a fantastic show for you tonight, and I want to give us all plenty of time with the author of Going Deeper, Jean-Claude Coven. During the last 10 to 15 minutes, we'll take calls so you can ask questions. I'll have to tell you, when I read Going Deeper about 6 months ago, it was a life-altering event. The magic that's captured in this quirky novel about a man on a quest for himself, led by a talking dog, captured my heart and my soul. Without further ado, let's talk to the author. Good evening, Jean-Claude. It's great to have you.
Good evening, Zany Mystic. How are you?
Great. I'm going to pretty much turn things over to you because I'm sure everyone would like to know how this all came about. I'm a big fan, and I've been reading your bio and, you know, where your journey has taken you, and you have had a phenomenal life. I mean, truly, you've had a mystical life. Let's hear a little bit more about how this book came about.
Well, I think, you know, when people ask me that, the book came about the same way that a baby gets birthed.
Yeah, I know.
You can only carry it for so long, and eventually it has to pop out.
Yep.
Ever since I can recall being on this planet, I knew it was not my own home. That whatever was going on around me was somebody else's culture, somebody else's values, somebody else's point of view and the way they looked at stuff. And it took me a very long time for me to find my own rhythm, my own beat, and my own passion.
Uh-huh.
And to say that it wasn't until after I turned 60 that I began following my own heart. And I wished I had done it a lot earlier, but I would say that both the world and I were not where we are now.
Oh,
and that for whatever reason, now was the perfect time. It was a journey of constant discovery and continues to be. I mean, more has happened to me over the past 2 months, I think, in terms of moving me down the trail than everything that's happened before that. So it's that much of an acceleration that we're experiencing right now. So where I was at the point when I wrote the book seems to me almost like ancient history.
Wonderful. You know, there's an idea that you brought forth that it has been talked about in other ways, but you actually crystallized it, and you mentioned the 70 million wanderers.
Mm-hmm.
When I read that, it just went straight to the core, you know, because I've read a lot of channel stuff, and I followed, you know, the various teachings, a lot of the ones that you have followed as well, and I thought that maybe the indigos and the crystals and the rainbows and the rest of them, you know, that we're all in kind of that group of people, of souls who have incarnated and have forgotten and who said, before they came in, I'll never forget, I'm going there to help everybody awaken, and they got here, and there's still, some of them are still trapped in the illusion. How did you come, tell us a little more about that idea.
The idea really comes, I mean, the mythology that absolutely resonated for me came out of a channeling that was done back in the early 80s by a group in Louisville, Kentucky, called LL Research.
Okay.
Carla Ruckert was the deep trance channel, and by deep trance, I mean she was completely out. It wasn't that she was sitting there with her eyes open.
Uh-huh.
She was lying down and completely in an altered state. Don Elkins was the questioner, and Jim McCarty was the scribe. The three of them, very unusually dedicated, but also very unusually intelligent and insightful people, brought forth this information from a higher terrestrial entity, a group called Ra, R-A.
Oh, yes, I'm very familiar with Ra. I love Ra.
Oh, of course. And when the first time I read that, it was given to me in Israel. We were traveling. This was a one-year trip around the world, just sitting at the feet of masters and teachers. And we were conducting a weekly workshop in Israel, in Tel Aviv, of all places. And one of our, you know, if I put it in quotation marks, a student was an MD, a doctor, a pediatrician that was very involved in creating rapprochement, working with the Palestinian doctors. And after about 4 or 5 weeks, he said, Jean-Claude, there's something you need to read. And he brought me the original version. It was an 8.5 by 11 saddle-stitched version of the Law of One.
Wow.
When I read it, the only thing that comes to mind to explain it was almost as if, imagine yourself being Sleeping Beauty.
Uh-huh.
And you're asleep for 100 years, and all of a sudden comes the prince and kisses you, and you wake up from 100 years sleep. That's the way I felt when I read this.
Wow.
Every single part of my body resonated to such an extent that I actually had to have healers from the UK come across to find my molecules and reassemble me.
My goodness.
So it was that profound an awakening for me, but not in terms of putting it all together, but all of a sudden giving me a sense of identity that I knew with absolute certainty, what I knew when I was a little child, that I was not of this planet, but I was here to serve.
Yeah.
Now I had to put together that little piece of knowledge with what is going on in the planet, what is service about, and how do I do this? How do I affect this?
Uh-huh.
And that took me the better part of another, you know, close to 20 years to work out.
Wow.
So it didn't come that lightly. And, you know, as you probably read in some of the acknowledgments, I've been very, very fortunate to travel the world and work with and be taught by and interact with some of the greatest beings on this planet in terms of masters and teachers.
Oh, yes. I know because I've been reading up on you. Why don't you clue the audience in on some of these, some of the incredible people you've met?
Oh,
it just goes on and on.
It does go, and it continues to go on and on. It's every single door was opened up to my wife, Ariane, and to me as we traveled.
Yeah.
When we were in Israel, Phyllis Schlemmer was there. She was the one who wrote the book, The Only Planet of Choice, and she was one of the principal characters in a book that's not easy to find, although I understand she's republished it on her website, called Briefing for the Landing on Planet Earth.
Yes. I wanted to ask you about that.
Yeah.
Where can you... I have heard about that book, and I think I tried to find it at one point. You know, it was one of those things that kind of... It popped out at me, and I did my little routine search on it, and I guess it wasn't the right time for me to read it, but... Now I'm very interested in reading it.
Well, let me tell you a story behind it that I don't talk about much, but it's a fascinating story.
Oh, please do.
I was in Australia working with Brian Crowley, and he was one of the authors of the Face on Mars book.
Right.
And I was heading out towards the UK, and he said, Jean-Claude, when you go to the UK, whatever you do, get a copy of Briefing for the Landing on Planet Earth. It was published in soft cover by Corgi, in hardcover by W.H. Allen and Company, major publishing houses.
Mm-hmm.
You should have no problem. I go to the U.K. and I go down to the Strand from one bookstore to another. Everyone's heard of it. Everyone had it. Nobody has it anymore.
Wow.
I called up Corgi, and they said, you know what? It was really selling well, but for some reason we pulled them back and we shredded them.
Oh,
I called up W.H. Allen saying, oh, you must have a copy. They said, we never published the book.
Whoa.
So I said, this is very, very weird. I mean, this was like walking into the Twilight Zone. Then the next place that I was going after the UK is I went to the west coast of the U.S.,
uh-huh.
and I went to visit with J.J. Hertak. Dr. Hertak was the author of The Keys of Enoch.
Yes, I'm familiar with those.
And I went to J.J.'s house, and he received me very well because he co-authored The Face on Mars with Brian Crowley. As a brother of Brian, I automatically became a friend of JJ's, and I told him about this thing that happened in the UK. And he said, very interesting that Brian wants you to read the book. I said, does it really exist?
Uh-huh.
And he asked me to go into one of his rooms and just lie down. And it's something you never do. You go to, you know, somebody's venerated person's house, like Dr. Hertak,
uh-huh.
and he has me lie down on a mat on the floor. The next thing I know, I'm fast asleep. When I awaken, there is the entire W.H. Allen edition, which they now call Prelude to the Landing on Planet Earth,
wow.
that he had mimeographed for me from his private copy.
Oh, my goodness.
And sure enough, it existed. And once I read the book, I understand exactly why it was pulled off the shelves. It had to do with what was going on during the time of Nixon and Kissinger and behind-the-scenes diplomacy and a whole bunch of things that I can understand that a lot of people didn't want to have public. But it is available now on one of Phyllis Schlemmer's sites, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, that I provide links to it on our site, which is goingdeeper.org, O-R-G. And if you look on suggested links, I think it might take you to the book.
Oh, good. That's wonderful.
I also found somebody in Israel
this is gold.
who years ago fell in love with Andrea Puharich, who's one of the major characters in Briefing for the Landing on Planet Earth. And dedicated an entire website to him, and as far as I know, have the entire book on the website. If
wow.
that link is still active, and I think that might be on our site as well, then a person can read it right on the internet. If not, I think Phyllis Schlemmer has reprinted it, and it's available on one of her sites.
Can you tell
Quite
me?
A story.
Does this? I've read some of the work that Dr. Boylan has been trying to, you know, circulate about the Nixon and Kissinger stuff and the meeting with advanced the star beings. And is that does that have something to do with a meeting with extraterrestrials that was held?
No, it doesn't. This thing here was really done actually behind Kissinger's back.
Oh.
There was Nixon at the time was trying to do a private deal with the Russians,
okay.
unbeknownst to Kissinger, apparently, which I find quite surprising, but this is the way the book goes, to move into the Persian Gulf and take over the oil fields. Russia then decided they had the advantage geographically. They
uh-huh.
didn't have the long chain of the long line of supply that the United States had.
Right.
There was a major movement for them, for their generals, to go in and ice the United States out.
Huh.
And there was a big meeting taking part at the Kremlin level, I don't know which level, but the top levels within Russia. And then the group that was involved, Sir John Whitmore, Andrea Piharich, Phyllis Schlemmer, and others, were asked by the Council of Nine to go into Russia to sit around Moscow and hold the energies so that they could shift the vote that was going to be happening in Moscow at the time so that did not take place. But it deals with a lot of incidents like that. It also deals with what happened in Israel with the war on the Golan Heights, how all of the Syrian tanks, their radios, all their military equipment, for 8 hours completely shut down.
Wow.
And put the fear of God in them. They saw some sort of Merkaba vehicle above them.
Huh.
And they became very, very, very scared little campers.
It sounds almost like this is part of the prelude or part of the ongoing effort to create that new world order.
Well, there's a lot of battles that were going on. I think that a lot of them now, you know, the days of the conspiracy, while it's still in its death throes, is fairly well over. That the shift on the planet right now is in full swing, and all the efforts that were taken to block it, I think now have come to naught. So there was a time when a lot of the old conspiracy theories held sway.
Mm.
They certainly went on. They certainly were important, but I don't think they are anymore. I think that we've made so many moves into the direction of light right now that it's almost irreversible. It doesn't take but a very, very tiny candle to mess up a very large dark room.
Thank goodness for that.
Mm.
You know, I had a guest on last week who's used to be an investigative reporter. Her father was quite famous, and he had done some research into Kennedy and the rest of it. And she is now homeless, and you know, she is being attacked. And
yeah, you know, you don't want to go there. You have to be very, very judicious into which battles you want to play,
right.
you want to fight, and you have to know why you want to do them. And what I'd always advise myself and others to do is play at the highest possible level.
Right.
All this stuff doesn't need to be exposed. All this stuff doesn't need to be dealt with. What's happening is, if long as we move towards light and
right.
we work on ourselves, all of this begins to fall into irrelevance.
Yeah, that's what I think too. You know, I very much agree with you. You know, and so it's like the you know, you can take the high road.
Oh, absolutely. And where it comes, I think, the most eloquently is with someone like David Icke.
Yeah.
Who has written, you know, all sorts of books about what the reptilian people do, what the conspiracy, the Illuminati, the Bilderberger, all the other goodies.
Right.
And in the end, he had this amazing ayahuasca experience where he saw the oneness of the cosmos.
Huh.
And his last book is Love is All There Is and Everything Else is Only Illusion.
I thought he had undergone some kind of shift or something.
Major.
You know, because I've read a couple of his books, and there was such a dramatic turnaround for him.
Yes.
You know, and there is for all of us. Don't you feel, you probably, more than anybody, are aware of the energies that are changing because the Earth is, correct me if I'm wrong, her energy is shifting to a higher level.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're approaching 2012, which is said to be, you know, the time when we get to ascend to, you know, other higher dimensions, if we choose to. What are your thoughts on where we're at right now? And is 2012 an actual, you know, some people are saying, is it real? Is it not real? Am I in imagination? Am I going crazy?
It's very tough to try to find a meeting place between space-time and time-space. Where we are in space-time, everything appears to be linear and consecutive.
Right.
When you flip into time-space, everything is simultaneous and happening at once. You can move in all directions, where dates don't mean a thing. And we're talking about moving from one paradigm, from space-time literally into time-space, into the next density of being, into the fourth density. And so the question of how real is 2012 is really a question that we would ask from where we are looking out and doesn't have as much relevance as people think. Personally, I think that 2012 may be a bit optimistic. I don't know that we have that much time. And until maybe 2 months ago, I felt really as if I were energetically pressed to get something important done, that I was running out of time.
Yes.
And something happened 2 months ago that flipped me out and changed my view of reality forever. That's why, you know, we talked about early on, the fantastic shift since the time of writing Going Deeper. I can barely identify with the me that was sitting at the keyboard when that book was birthed.
Talk about that some more, will you? What happened to you a couple of months ago?
What happened to me was a story that is beyond fiction. In fact, it's the story that I just posted. I write a weekly column for UPI, United Press International, for their Religion and Spirituality Forum. And it was the column I just posted that ran this Tuesday. And I'm sending it out to editors all over the world.
Oh, wonderful. Where can people take a look at that?
Under UPI. Under UPI Religion and Spirituality Forum,
okay.
Or easily, if they want to do this, it's the easiest way is to go to goingdeeper.org.
Okay.
And then on the menu on the left-hand side, they'll see UPI articles.
Oh, good.
Click on there, and the last one will be there.
Good.
But it's an amazing story. I'm just sending it out as a newsletter as well as to 1,200 magazines around the world.
Oh, wow.
Here's what happened, and it's the most improbable set of events imaginable. You know, you take a look at the fact that there are 6.4 billion people on the planet. There are only two people in the United States trained in a particular process called Atlas Prophylax. You'll see the link on the website as well. What this process does is it aligns the C1, the uppermost vertebrae, which doesn't look anything like all of the rest. Now, the story goes like this. I was doing a talk at the Mind, Body, Spirit Expo in San Diego on the 25th of March. And I walk in, and my wife is there, and she's talking to a doctor and introduces me. And it was Renan Shahar, and this was a doctor with whom she co-taught in Belgium for NAET. So the two of them knew each other as peers, and we went through this whole thing, and we went through all the, what are you doing? And he said, you've got to come and experience this. I have just learned this. I returned from Switzerland with this process. And I was just about to talk, and he said, no, still have it. And I said, sure, why not? When the universe offers, I always say yes.
Yes.
He aligned my C1. Now, imagine yourself standing below a large dam, and they say, okay, now there'll be a rush of water, so I want you to really dig your feet into the sand. Ready? And they break the dam, and you get swept up in this current, your feet and everything with you.
Wow.
That's what happened when the C1 aligned. It was as if all the energies inside of me just started shooting forward in ways that are unimaginable.
Wow.
And with it, now here's where it gets really interesting. With it came a clear message that I have undone something which was locked into the veil, into the human genome. And I said, well, what does that mean? And that was the extent of my message. I called up a friend of mine, Wynn Free.
Yes.
You know Wynn. He's the author of The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce.
Yes, yes.
And I said, Wynn, I need your help, because he works with Terry Brown, and the two of them together channel the Elohim. And I've read some of his material, and I'm really impressed with the quality of what the two of them bring forth.
Yes.
And I said, do me a favor. Ask the Elohim, am I dreaming? Is this real? What is the story? He comes back a couple of weeks later. He says, sit down. You are absolutely right. The C1 was put out deliberately by the Anunnaki.
Wow.
Now, the only place I've ever even heard of the Anunnaki was in passing when I read Zechariah Sitchin's book, The 12th Planet.
Right.
So I go back and I take a look at it, and the Anunnaki did it when they did they had a rebellion where their own people were mining the gold that they needed to preserve their atmosphere.
Uh-huh.
And so they wanted them to use what was that Homo erectus that preceded Homo sapiens.
Uh-huh.
But it was like, you know, let's train chipmunks to mine gold. It wasn't working.
Right.
The species just wasn't intelligent enough. So they did some genetic engineering to bring in some of their own genes to mix it with Homo erectus to create, that's why there is no missing link, to create Homo sapiens. But in order to keep Homo sapiens compliant and easy to control and programmable, they deliberately engineered into the genome the C1 being out of position.
Oh.
99.9% of the people on the planet have it out. Not only does everyone have it out, everyone has it out to the same direction, which means
Wow.
it couldn't happen because of trauma. It had to happen genetically.
Wow.
So when I had this realigned, it was all of a sudden that thing that kept me locked within being compliant and easy to control blew away, and I had a clear flow of energy between me and the cosmos. Then I go out to deliver the talk, and I'm gibbering. I mean, I don't know how to put two words together. And I had no idea what I said, but people appear to have loved it. And for the first time, I found myself not coming from my head, but speaking from the heart.
Wow.
Now imagine a couple of weeks later, a couple of weeks before now, probably about a month later, the only other person in the U.S. who was trained in this process comes to our house, Theodore Hain, and interacts with my wife, who is a traditional naturopath, and myself. We have a wonderful connection. And he was going to train his son, who lives in the next town from us, in the process, and asked us whether we could send a bunch of people to him so that his son could learn. He needs to train on 50 people before he's ready. Every single person who had it was out. Every single person who had the correction done experienced the most profound shifts imaginable and instantaneous. Now, astroprophylax may or may not be the only technique that does that. I'm told that there's a Blair technique that does it very well.
Uh-huh.
Network chiropractic does it. And there may be some shamans and there may be some other techniques that do it. But whatever you do, I urge you to have your C1 realigned.
Wow. Well, where do I sign up?
I don't know. Again, go to the website, read the article, and then you can follow some of the links.
Okay.
There are, I think, 250 practitioners of Blair. I don't know how many network chiropractors there are in the U.S., but I think there's a fair number of them. This is not something that chiropractors know how to do. It's a completely different type of process that is so profound. It's almost as if you're allowing the free run of the Kundalini energy to come up.
Wow.
And so it triggers spiritual, emotional, and physical issues that are latent and locked behind the damn wall in such a way that words fail me. This, you know, we're dealing with stuff that's too elusive to talk about and say this is what to expect, because for each person it's entirely different. But what will happen, all of a sudden, if you've been living in a black and white world, you're going to see colors you never dreamed possible. You're going to get to meet who you are. So that just happened to me. So as a result, I'm experiencing a newness of me that I never, never dreamed existed. So it's an ongoing, as I say, it's an ongoing process.
Wow. That is amazing.
And continues to be. And what happened was really interesting. I wanted to be on the platform with David. David Icke will be speaking the 6th, 7th, and 8th, or the 7th, 8th, and 9th, I think, of July up in Mount Shasta at an awakening conference. And it's one put on by Shalimar Productions.
Okay.
And if anybody can get up there, get up there. Look at the website, Shalimar, Shalomar Productions, and you'll see it. And I met Shalimar when I was speaking at WESAC, and he said, Jean-Claude, I'd love to have you up there, but it's impossible because we're booked and blah, 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 blah. Next year would be wonderful. He heard what I had to say and realized that I wasn't speaking from my head.
Uh-huh.
And whatever happened, he said, Jean-Claude, you have to come. He said, we'll figure out how to put you in. I'll work it out. You're coming. It the message, when you get in touch with your heart center instead of your head center,
mm-hmm.
so we're not talking about words and concepts and aliens and stuff and phenomenon, all the things that people love to listen to
right.
with their intellect.
Right.
That if we can transcend the mind and learn to think with the heart and love with the mind instead of the other way around, part of us opens up in the most magnificent way. And then we connect with such incredible intimacy. We move into what we would call heaven, or the fourth density. We begin to link. And that's what happened during that conference.
Wow.
When people, for the very first time, had a taste of what it will be like to move into the next density, when we link as a social memory complex, when we all stay individuated, but we all join as one at the same time. We enter the land of paradox.
Wow. Do you feel that that has something like akin to the 100th monkey principle at all?
Oh, absolutely. There's no question of it to me. That if enough of us can hold that energy,
mm-hmm.
if enough of us can awaken, of the 70 million of the beings that have come from the higher densities,
mm-hmm.
that we spoke about earlier, to take incarnation on Earth, if enough of us can hold that energy, then we will open up that portal, and every single being on the planet will be given the chance to shift or not. And the probability is that most of the beings will opt not to, because for whatever reason they don't feel complete with the third density experience.
Right.
You
right.
can't move into the light because of ego. So each of the beings will have the opportunity to go or not to go, and it's up to us not to have, I think the expression is, ain't got no dog in this fight. Our job is simply to hold the door open as an
right,
invitation
right.
and to honor whatever choice people want to make and honor it equally.
Well, clearly we haven't reached that critical mass yet.
I think we're a lot closer than I thought.
Well, I do too. And I don't, like you said, I don't think that 2012 is a... I mean, it's a nice idea, but the reality is what we create together.
Hear, hear. I couldn't agree more. And the sense of urgency that I had...
Mm-hmm.
is completely gone, and I can't explain it other than identify it. It's completely gone, and I have a tremendous sense of certainty that the job has been done. That's not to say that there isn't a massive amount of work to do.
Right, right.
It's a total foregone conclusion right now that we have enough momentum, we're close enough to enough of us waking up that we're right at the threshold of holding
yes.
this if we're not there already.
Yes, it does feel that way.
It does.
It really does.
It really does. And the beings that I'm meeting are exquisite. And I'm finding within every single person an internal resonance, that may be hidden by all sorts of stuff,
mm-hmm.
but it's beginning to emerge.
Mm-hmm.
And they're beginning to realize who they really are. And it's just amazing.
Well,
it's
definitely
to be
like a magic carpet
being.
Ride when you allow the universe to present itself.
Hear, hear. Absolutely right. Absolutely.
And for me, I don't know how you feel about synchronicity, but clearly, you're living synchronicity. And, the more synchronous, I believe everything is synchronous. It's just our awareness that is lacking. That we're living in total synchronicity in every moment, that everything is synchronous. And the more we can tune into those little guide lights, like on a runway where the plane is coming down at night,
mm-hmm.
the synchronicity will guide us.
Oh, absolutely. I remember when I first started on the journey,
mm-hmm.
I was listening to a tape by Ram Dass. I mean, he was so critically important to so many of us early
Oh,
on.
My gosh, yes.
And he said he traveled the world with a little book on the Tao, the way.
Uh-huh.
And in the front was a saying, and it said, the Tao is very simple, provided you have no preferences. And I burst out laughing, because the only thing that blocks us from synchronicity and perceiving it
mm-hmm.
is our concept of preference.
Yep.
We're judgmental.
Yep.
I mean, what happened was very interesting, because I have a very, very good friend by the name of Lefty Wilner, who's 78, but he's like a world-class tennis player, played with Don Budge, played with, some of the top names of the past
uh-huh.
in tennis. And very well respected in the tennis world. And he's trying to teach me tennis. We're having a good time. And tennis is a metaphor for us being together. And I suggested that he have the C1 put in. And he did. He just came back and had it done yesterday. And he said, Jean-Claude, I cannot thank you enough. I actually burst into tears on the way home. It was so profound for me, blah, 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 blah. And then he said he spoke to a friend of his that he plays tennis with who's an MD. And the doctor said, absolutely not. They're going to twist my neck. In fact, there's no twisting whatsoever. You're going to end up being paralyzed. It's the stupidest thing you could do. And the doctor had every preference in the world to block him from one of the greatest gifts that the universe was going to give.
Wow.
And he found it in his heart to deny it to himself because he was too much of a learned man to empty his cup and accept something which did not already exist within his paradigm.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of ego that you have to give up, too.
There you go.
You know, I mean, a lot of people, when you live out of ego and you're, you know, you are coming from a material world where everything is, you know, material is what your reality is, then something about that, these mystical experiences, tells you that you're going to lose all that.
Yes.
You know,
you have to be willing to lose your identity entirely to make this journey.
And basically, you know, there's nothing to be afraid of. You know, we're like we're fearless warriors, and you know, it's so much better on the other side of the, you know, of the gate, you know, than to have to be constantly run by society and the manipulations and controls and all the stuff that, you know, we could get into. David Icke talks about a lot, but you know, that doesn't have to be that way.
Absolutely correct. And we have far more of a play field than we ever dreamed possible.
Mm-hmm.
We feel, you know, down here, we feel separated within the illusion. We feel as if we're not part of the cosmos. We feel as if we're abandoned on a tiny little planet, on a star that's at the far-flung end of a galaxy, one of hundreds of billions of stars, one of hundreds of billions of galaxies. There's no way that we can look out at the vastness of it all from the perspective of the illusion and make sense of it. But when we let go of all of that and lose our sense of identity and realize that we're not even here, we're projected into this thing, we're a consciousness impinged on an illusion to have a game, to have an experience, to report back into the oneness, and revisit God from an entirely different point of view. I had a fun call from a lady who was very, very well-meaning yesterday. I think she found my name on a national do not call list.
Mm-hmm.
And she called so that she could read me a scripture from the Bible. And she was a Seventh-day Adventist, a Jehovah's Witness. And she meant very well. She came totally from her heart. And it was very difficult to have a conversation with her because I loved her so much.
Yeah.
You know, to say that, no, I don't view any particular book as holy, nor do I see God outside of anything in all of creation. There is only God.
Right, right.
There is not a God separate from man. There's not a God separate from a matchstick or an insect.
Right.
There is only God. Throughout all of creation, manifest or no, there is only the oneness of all that is. And all we are, from my perspective, is that part of the oneness experiencing itself through me to see what it would be like to be me. And that's all any of this is. We exist in an infinite instant that is timeless and doesn't hardly even exist except in the mind, heart of the oneness. And so now try to explain this and say, is the Bible the work of God? Well, it's a bunch of stories taken from the Sumerian, retranslated through the Aramaic, into the Greek and into the Hebrew, edited 15 times. That makes very, very little sense, and you're telling me it's the Word of God. There is nothing in all of creation which is not the Word of God.
No, no. And it's been distorted, you know, because there are certain points of view that I think those who were in charge wanted to emphasize at the time.
Yes. And the most damaging thing that religion has ever passed down to us is the concept of a noun God.
Yes.
That God and the creation are separate, that one is the artist, the other is the work. And therefore, we are separate from God because we are created in its image or whatever it might be. When we take the Buckminster Fuller view, where he said, God, it seems to me, is a verb, and God now becomes not the creator, but the infinite unfoldment of creation itself, now everything changes. And if we grasp that concept and ride that railway, Mm-hmm. My God, now we go to the end of the universe instead of constantly running around in a little circle thinking we're being holy.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, when everything is divided, when God is outside of ourselves, then it requires an intermediary.
Absolutely.
And it's funny how intermediaries have to charge you money to get to,
indeed,
get to what you
already
have.
Indeed, in one form or another, either they're in your wallet or in your soul.
Yes. Amen.
No, that's unfortunate.
And, it is. It's very sad.
And bless them, they mean well. You know,
yeah.
They're just passing on the mythology that they bought into.
But don't you feel, though, with the awakening that's occurring, that a lot of that stuff is going to get shaken up?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, there's no question of it.
I mean, it almost has to for people to make a valid choice.
Oh, no, absolutely. And to realize that belief is the lowest possible form of processing information.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, it's akin to a hypothesis in science. You know, you have a belief, terrific. Isn't it wonderful? And it takes you wherever it takes you. But please realize it's a belief. A belief is something you bought into because you were told, you read, but you don't know.
Exactly.
Wouldn't it be wonderful each day to know absolutely nothing, to wake up each day with an absolute empty cup, saying, Universe, I'm a little child, teach me as if I knew nothing. Make each day brand new and miraculous to me.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing has to connect. Today can be absolutely unique.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what a great way to go through life.
That's wonderful. You know, one of the things I like about your writing, it's so irreverent. And it's as if, I mean, you got right into my soul, you know, because I have those same experiences where I have, maybe it's not a dog, a talking dog or a talking tree, but I understand the essence of that experience.
Yeah.
And I have had mystical experiences where those things have talked to me, believe me. And, you know, I love the laughter part because laughter seems to raise the vibration out of a, you know, from a low state to a higher one. And you have that ability to create very humorous, profound, you know, writing at the same time.
Well, thank you. I keep telling people there's only three things in life worth taking seriously. And people say, well, what are they? And finally, one person looked at me and said, I know what they are. And I said, what are they? They said, nothing, nothing, and nothing. And I burst out laughing. Because I used to tell people, I have no idea what they are. And if you ever find them out, please don't tell me about them. But
I love it.
Nothing, nothing, and nothing are the only things worth taking seriously. And there's a chapter in the book which was really fun, because the book, by the way, was a download. I would love to say that I wrote it, but in fact I didn't. It was as much a teaching for me as it was for anybody who reads
it. It flows so well. It's as if you got it. It's like the Michelangelo statues and, you know, the great works of art. They just chip away what's not there.
I can't believe you're saying this. You're making me have cold flashes. I just finished sending out a newsletter.
Uh-huh.
With Michelangelo's David, with that exact line in it, not more than half an hour before you called me.
Wow.
You're giving me absolute
vibration,
chills.
I guess. Synchronicity.
My God. But you were talking about, there's a chapter in the book called The Ultimate Proposition, when the character is speaking to his higher self, and the higher self says, look, I got a deal for you. He says, yeah, what? He says, you give me absolutely everything that you have, and I promise to give you absolutely nothing in return, and you shall have the better of the bargain. And so he spends quite a bit of time, as you recall, struggling with that kind of lousy deal till he finally figures out what this really means.
Yeah.
That in the nothing is everything. It came, I remember, I had one of those wonderful, wonderful, rare moments that come so unexpectedly. I was watching the sunset over the Pacific, and all of a sudden, just the beauty of it all just totally, totally overcame me. And I had the realization that the greatest gift I ever could be given was to be aware that I had sufficient consciousness to bear witness to creation.
Oh, yes.
And that anything else that I asked for, in addition to that, simply diminished what I already had.
Oh. Yes, that's awesome.
And it was awesome. And I realized that, my God, if we would stop our preferences and our judgments and our comparisons and our need to understand and simply move into absolute appreciation and gratitude, this is the most amazing, amazing place imaginable.
Yeah.
And, you know, those of us who are having this conversation, who are listening to this program, who have access to the kind of stuff that we talk about, we're part of the 1% of the most privileged few who don't have to concern their every single moment with survival.
Right.
We actually can move into this. And then it's not about having a bigger car or more money in the bank or being
right.
more famous or all the stuff that the illusion would have us look at and
yep.
collect all of these plastic brass rings on this merry-go-round we all are meant to ride, and that we realize there's something much larger going on, and that we are far bigger, far,
mm-hmm.
far bigger than ever we dreamt of in our philosophies.
Mm-hmm. I love this line that I from your, I printed it out off of the Prism House Press,
mm-hmm.
and it says, you're describing a point in time when your mentor asked whether I would like to see the next octave of creation.
I remember that experience.
And I got to read this right, because it's so priceless. Might as well ask a starving man if he would like a meal.
Right.
I was taken outwards, if there was such a thing as direction, into an ever brighter light. Suddenly, the intensity overwhelmed my insatiable curiosity, and I recoiled in pain. For the second time, the voice laughed, letting me know I had much yet to do before I could enter these refined realms.
Right.
I thought that was wonderful.
Oh, it's amazing. You know, to realize that, you know, this is exactly what we're talking about, moving into the fourth density.
Yes.
What it is a more refined octave
yes.
of vibration. It's a denser form of consciousness, which is why it's a higher density. And it reflects a light quotient that we need to be comfortable in.
Uh-huh.
And you can't do it by ego. You can't declare yourself the winner and say, okay,
no.
I've mastered this, I'm ready to go. You will absolutely recoil the same way I recoiled from it if you're not ready for it.
Right.
And no matter who you are in all of creation, as long as there's a you, there's a level of brightness you can't quite take yet. And that's true of the ascended masters, and it's true of, you know, the highest beings from the sixth density and so on.
There's always more.
Always. This is an infinite journey. You know, we think there's a destination. There isn't. We are simultaneously at every single level of our journey.
Yeah.
It was one of the most difficult concepts to get across in the book in Going Deeper, to explain how that actually works, how we can simultaneously be in eight densities at the same time and be spinning out into other multi-universes.
Right, the multidimensional being.
It's a very tricky, paradoxical concept.
And it sounds like you're, you know, like many other people, are awakening to the other dimensions of your own being,
mm-hmm.
and learning how to be those simultaneously.
Yeah, we exist on an infinite continuum. If you recall in the book, there's a point where they just finished doing sacred Indian medicine wheel ceremony,
mm.
and it comes a little 2.5-foot raccoon
dressed yeah.
in a brocade vest with a boater hat and an orange bow tie and a cane, and kicks the rocks out of the sacred hoop, jumps on top of the center cairn, and then delivers the entire wisdom of the universe in a rap song.
Yes, a Rocky Raccoon, wasn't it?
Rocky Raccoon, right. And
yeah.
then proceeded, you know, and then they asked the character, there's some lines, gotta stop the constant chatter, find the soul in all you see, move on past the world of matter, look into the eyes of infinity. And then they asked me, what does looking into the eyes of infinity mean? And I didn't know, you know, the eyes are the windows to the soul, you know, all the usual stuff that you come up with. And they burst out laughing. They said, Jean-Claude, you've lost your childlike innocence. Ask any 5-year-old what looking into the eyes of infinity means, and they would say, well, spell out infinity. I don't know what it is. And you would say, infinity. And they say, well, there are 3 eyes. Infinity, 3 eyes. And they said, absolutely right. The ego eye, the soul eye, and the God eye.
Uh-huh.
Don't you realize that you exist on an infinite continuum? From within the illusion at the ego state through your soul into the oneness. It's all you. In all of creation, there is only you. And that's true of every single being. And when you get that, part of you just goes, wow. And you just expand into an infinite state of being.
Uh-huh.
If even for an instant, once you have been there, nothing nothing will ever be the same.
It's like Pandora's box. You can't put the lid back on.
No, you can't. It's like, how are you going to keep them down on the farm after they've seen Tyree? You know, it's that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
When you had that level of bliss and connection, you can never close the lid. You can never deny it again.
Wow. Well, that's absolutely awesome.
We're having altogether too much fun, you and I. But that's what this journey is about. It's when people say, I want to be enlightened, and they go through this heavy-duty practice, I'm going, what? It's not called enheavement.
There's a guy, Swami Beyond Ananda.
Oh, I know him. Absolutely delightful.
Isn't he great?
Oh, you know, I could take him at every meal. He is just perfect. And he's one who absolutely appreciates this. And he's very, very wise. He's a terrific speaker. And, you know, has much, much wisdom to share with mirth and humor.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And you know, he has such a gift with language as well. You know,
he's brilliant.
Just the way he turns things around and turns a phrase.
Yes. No, he's brilliant. You know, I have great reverence for the pun, as you can tell from the book.
Oh, me too.
And
absolutely.
He's you know, one of the great masters on the planet, and also has a tremendous message worth giving. So I have a lot of time for Swami Beyond Ananda.
Uh-huh.
And I want to thank you guys for all the work that you're doing to make such a difference, to bring these messages out to, you know, millions and millions of people. This is important stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
Not that anything that you or I say is true, because it isn't. But what
we're
just presenting is another point from which people can view. And I tell myself every day, and I tell everyone else that I meet, if I go to sleep believing something and wake up the next morning believing the same thing, no big deal, I'm stuck. It's that simple.
Yeah.
That as I have these experiences, the last thing in the world that I can even remember is how I perceived life yesterday. That was then. Now is now.
Yes.
And you know what? There's a completely different me in this process. The Indians talk about, in India, they talk about watching the Ganges run by, and they said, you can never see the same river twice.
Right.
It's constantly flowing.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, and life is that way. Every day is that way. If you think you're in a rut, boy, you better change the point from which you're viewing. Because
well,
you will create your own reality.
I know that I'm not coming to a high
place
when I tell myself that I've done something before. Because nothing has ever happened before.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly,
everything is
exactly.
new. Everything is recreated from scratch. It's like a big bread, leavening and bread baking in the oven, and it's never the same. Even if you bake bread 1,000 loaves, each loaf is different.
We're going to have to schedule another campfire, you and I.
Absolutely.
I think we're racing the clock towards the witching hour.
Oh, yes, yes. Do we have time to get any phone calls?
You tell me. I'm with you as long as you'd like me.
Oh, good. Well, we've got until 7.
Okay.
So if Doug's there, and if anybody wants to call in, this would be a good time to do it.
And what number? I'll call in for you.
Oh, yes. Hold on.
As Ram Dass likes to say, this is the point in the evening when you pretend you have questions and we'll pretend we have answers.
Exactly. We're all actors on a stage.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, you know what? I don't have the number handy, so
okay.
We're just going to keep going.
Then you tune in to the collective consciousness and ask any question that you think people would like to begin to explore.
Okay. If you had to share one idea with the rest of the world, what would you?
Oh, I love that question.
Okay.
Thank you. I always say, you know, remember Mork and Mindy?
Yes.
And at the end of the show, he would go nanu nanu and report to Orson.
Yes.
So here I am reporting to Orson, and Orson says, well, what did you learn? What sum up all of the Earth illusion experience in one sentence? And I would say, Orson, what you see depends on where you're looking from.
Yeah.
And wherever you perceive is true, so what? If what you see never changes, guess what? The point of view that you're looking from is stuck. And if you insist on holding that point of view, why should it be surprising that what you see never changes?
Mm-hmm.
And so all I encourage people to do is to constantly learn to shift the point from which they view and not hold onto anything that they see as truth.
Absolutely.
Simply hold it onto as a passing perception.
We had a caller.
And that to me would, you know, if you say what is the sum of all of your teaching, that would be it. I don't think it gets easier or deeper than that.
Forgive me. We had a caller.
Okay.
And I couldn't figure it out quick enough. Oh,
that's
there
right.
They are. They're back. So let me get to it.
Okay. Everything happens just as it's supposed to.
Whether we like it or not, you're absolutely right.
Be conscious of the fact that you're playing a role.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm having a little difficulty hearing, however.
Well, I'm having the same difficulty. Ah, there we go.
Okay, hello?
Yeah.
Hi.
Hi, this is Carmel. Is this Amy?
Is there a caller? With a
yes,
question?
It is.
There was a caller with a question, but I think what will have to happen is she may have to ask Doug the question. Doug may have to relay it because of the technical difficulties, if that would work.
Yeah.
Hello?
Oh, my God, I hear you
Hi,
as a distant voice.
Oh, there we are. There's a delay. They're screening me.
While we're in this mode, it sounds like you must be a very busy man. I mean, you got the message, and it looks like you're. I just love the way you're getting your message out because it's got to be put out.
Without my brother here, things can become a little bit more difficult.
Okay.
So you've got to. I had this working earlier. It all was beautiful.
Doug, if you can ask the lady for her question.
Yeah.
Maybe we could take it from you.
Yeah.
No, that's probably wise. Next time when she calls up for the third time, knowing it must be a third time charm and very important, I will definitely ask.
Please, I'd not like to frustrate anybody out there.
Yes,
yeah, and Doug,
have,
I'm having
are.
A little trouble
understand.
Hearing
she
on my end.
Perfect across the sound.
If you can tweak it somehow.
Pleasure, and I'll let you go. Pleasure.
Okay.
Okay.
It doesn't sound like there's going to be a Going Deeper 2 book.
Well, there is.
There is.
What happened is this is a very interesting book. I mean, Going Deeper, you have to understand, was written completely for me. The fact that it helped other beings on this planet is simply because they share with me the role of being a wanderer, a light worker,
absolutely.
Or a starseed. It was written for us, for our group.
Yes.
Now imagine Larry having had this incredible experience in the desert,
uh-huh.
coming up with all this metaphysical shifting.
I was getting a delay, actually, so I wasn't sure if they were ready for me.
He's still sore from the divorce. He can't get intimate with a woman.
Yep.
He's now 2 months later, where he is every Sunday at this outdoor coffee shop doing the Los Angeles Times crossword puzzle, and comes up a Latin barista, the guy that makes the coffee inside, incredibly good-looking guy, Latino, who's like in the movies looking for his big break, and all the women absolutely adore him. And he hands Larry a note, a letter in an envelope. And Hector, the barista, is very, very angry because he couldn't get to first base with this woman who apparently was one of the most gorgeous things he has ever seen in his life. And she only wanted to focus on Larry, but then she disappears. Larry looks at the note, and it's sort of an invitation to the dance, where this woman says, I've watched you for a while, you're not ready for me. But if you're willing to go through the process, I'm willing to wait. As soon as you feel you're absolutely ready, here is my number, and she signs it April. And then Larry goes off with Zeus. They have this conversation about intimacy. He realizes, despite his metaphysical advancements, he's an emotional cripple, and he's going to have to heal himself.
Oh, yeah.
And then he decides to go on this journey. And what he learns along the way through numerology, astrology, past life regression, tantra, a whole bunch of things, is he learns to surrender completely all his sense of masculine identity to the point where he's able to absolutely hold unconditional space for the latent Aphrodite energy in all women and then shower her with sufficient adoration for that tree to not only grow but to bear fruit and transport the two of them into the higher states of awareness.
Wow.
Then he finds out, I'm giving the whole book away, but why not? It's fun.
Yeah, go ahead.
Then he finds out that April, in fact, is not her real name. April is her month. And she is, in fact, not human. She doesn't exist in this density at all, except for this one manifestation.
Uh-huh.
He's directed to go to Cyprus, to Paphos, to a special museum where there's this incredible extraterrestrial rock that holds the energy of Aphrodite. He enters the rock and has an incredible experience with her and becomes totally transformed. And it becomes what this is now, is a step-by-step guide of what man has to do to absolutely evoke the goddess, the divinity,
yes,
in women, the transformation that we have to go through. So what I want it to be, it's a step-by-step primer of what we do, you know, which websites you go to play with your name, to find the numerology, to learn about astrology in a completely different way. We have it backwards. It'll explain why.
Oh, good.
And a whole bunch of other things that we have to do to let go of all the blockages within us in our lower chakras so that we can feel secure enough in our own masculinity to lose our identity into the feminine. And that's what the next book is about. I'm three chapters
wonderful.
Into that.
You know, I've also read that some channels speak of the human race, or, you know, some beings becoming androgynous.
That would be a shame. I kind of enjoy sex far too.
Well, and then, of course, you have, you know, the whole gay movement, too. We can't leave anybody out of that.
Oh, no. And this was something that I struggled with for the longest time. You know, must this be heterosexual? And the answer is clearly no.
Good.
As long as one of the partnership wants to take on the divine feminine,
yes,
and the other wants to take on the adoring masculine, it doesn't matter what their actual overt, their outer sexes are.
Oh, bless you.
This is an entirely different thing. And I struggled with this for a long time because I did not know the answer.
Uh-huh.
So I was open to either. This is one of these deals where you have to have no preference. And you,
yes,
say, please explain to me, dear universe, What do I need to see here? And the outer shell of the sex for this process is totally immaterial.
Oh, wonderful. I am so glad to hear you say that. Because, you know, I've heard such enlightened people that are, I won't mention any names, that are very well known.
No.
And they have a brilliant message until it comes down to sexuality. And some of them say, you know, well, it's got to be heterosexual because homosexuals are less than.
No.
And I honestly don't believe that. Like you just said it so beautifully.
No.
You know.
No, it's the willingness of each of the beings in the relationship to make it sacred.
Absolutely.
As long as you stay in the lower chakra, if the relationship is completely sexual, then this stuff is meaningless to you, whether you're heterosexual,
exactly,
or,
exactly,
homosexual or lesbian. It doesn't matter.
Exactly.
But if you're willing to transcend this and take it into the higher realms, then what you've got is you've got the true tantra.
Oh,
the sexual.
Too bad that we started on tantra towards the top of the hour, because that's one of my favorite subjects.
Mm.
That the sacred union, you know, with another person's soul is beyond.
Absolutely correct.
You know, and,
absolutely
and
correct.
The body is capable of such incredible experiences that people just have no clue.
Yes.
And, you know, I've done some tantra things myself, and I've had people tell me that every cell in the body is vibrating with sexual energy, and that the reason why people feel so dead is because they're not experiencing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that vibrancy and that aliveness gets sucked out.
Oh, no, and the trick is to use that energy and bring it straight up.
Yes.
The spinal column, that's why it's so vital that C1 and C5 are aligned.
Okay.
I hate breaking in because this is such a great, magnificent show. I
got
to tell
absolutely.
You, I always hear blue bands of great, great communication whenever you're on, Jean-Claude. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much, Jean-Claude. And again, people can check out all of this information at goingdeeper.org. Be sure and check it out. This is very important stuff. And thanks again, and bless you. You're just wonderful.
It is my pleasure. You light the campfire. I'll bring s'mores, and
okay,
we'll roast another time.
I'd love to be talking with you again later.
Okay.
All right. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.